I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, everyone. It's Thursday morning, the 20th of January, 2022. You're very welcome along to the Tillage Podcast. My name is Stephen Robb, and as always, I'm joined by my colleagues Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh to run through your key tillage stories of the week. So guys, look, the weather forecast for last week held true. It has been a relatively good week weather-wise. It's been dry. There is seepage, as you say, Siobhan. There isn't much drying, but the ground is getting a chance to soak as such. So around the country, sprayers are getting dusted off, new mould boards are getting fitted to ploughs. Are we on the cusp of probably the first big weekend of fieldwork of the year, do you think?
Yeah, I think this weekend I'll see a lot of people moving out, Stephen. You know, there's bits of ploughing being done here and there, and I think there'll be a good lot of people out at the weekend by the look of the forecast, hopefully, if it stays well. And I think people will be moving on beans as well. You know, there's a good appetite for beans out there this year, and I'd say we'll probably see some spring beans being planted soon. What do you think, Andy?
I go along with that completely, Siobhan. I think that it's not a case of patience. Sometimes it is, but this year it isn't. I think ground generally has been improving for quite some time now. And with another week of zero rainfall across virtually all of the country, I think people, they will be waiting that other 1, 2 or 3 days if a field needs it. But I think that there will be opportunities, certainly on drier land, to get going towards the end of the week. And certainly I'd be expecting a good few machines to be working next week. At planting, that is, I'd say ploughing will probably be getting underway now anyway.
Yeah, I saw some early potatoes being planted up in my home country there last weekend, which is always good to see. Haven't seen too much of it over the past few years, so it really gives you an indication of just how good the conditions are at the moment. I suppose for spring beans, Andy, just for I suppose the first of the crops that are going to be planted this weekend, what are the kind of key points that growers need to watch out for in terms of planting depths, seed rates, and so on and so forth?
Well, I think, Stephen, all growers will be very aware of the need to get seed well into the ground. I think maybe the bit that they would be less conscious of is trying to be tidy with seed, because if you don't have seed on top of the ground, then chances are the crows may not know they're there. I don't believe that would be the truth, but the more tidy or the more untidy you are on top, the greater pressure you put on your field in terms of subsequent damage. So you need to get them down that 4 inches or 10 centimetres. And lots of guys nowadays are doing that in a very good way with the strip till planters, the likes of the Sumo, the Claydon, etc. They're getting in there, they have minimum cultivation, minimum disturbance, getting the seed well into the ground and providing a good environment for growth. The only thing that I would say in that type of scenario is that you really do need to have good soil fertility, just basic soil fertility, to get that to work well. It's not that easy to get the P's and K's down with strip till. I mean, it's possible with some of the more sophisticated methods, but it's not that easy. So it's they're always better targeted at a field that is good fertility and in particular to begin with good pH, because pH for any crop that is utilizing bacteria, and beans are in particular because they're making their own nitrogen, having a high pH is important for it to get the balance of the microbial content of the ground right, to get good, easy, quick nodulation and nitrogen production.
Yeah, but arguably that should have already been done at this stage.
Oh, that's all historic stuff. That's where you're targeting your beans. If you have beans in a rotation, get those things right in advance. Build up to it. Don't be building it here and now. If you really need a lot of P and K or and lime to go into a field where you're going to plant beans, then maybe putting them in with the plough might be a better way to do it, or at least full cultivation. Because at least you can get the whole fertilizer mixed up in the ground, whereas if you're putting it on the top of the ground after planting via strip till, that P and K is too high for the roots to really make best use of it.
I think with drilling beans in particular, a lot of guys do rely on contractors to do the job, and I suppose this week was the first week we kind of got confirmation from the trade in a way, as regard for prices for 2022. The Association of Farm and Forestry Contractors in Ireland, FCA, they're after publishing their annual price guide, and I see pretty much across the board you're looking at a 5% increase in contractor charges. They say that this is because of significant increases in the cost of machinery, tires, fuel, lubricants and labour experienced over 2021 and into 2022. So I suppose we knew it was coming. The increase in input costs isn't just limited to fertilizer prices, unfortunately. It's going to be across the board, and I suppose this is the first indication of contractor charges that we're seeing. Much more on that in this week's Irish Farmers Journal newspaper, so pick up a copy in shops today. Guys, look, we'll move on. So last week we had the first session of the National Tillage Conference, and unsurprisingly the focus was on crop nutrition, and particularly optimizing crop nutrition for the season ahead for obvious reasons. Siobhan, you have a little bit in the paper this week about valuing organic fertilizer or organic manures. What do they have to say for themselves?
Yeah, so this was a really interesting bit, and I suppose a useful reference to have from last week's conference. So David Wall just outlined some of the NP and K value and then the monetary value of the organic manure. So just as a quick example, 1,000 gallons of cattle slurry, 6% dry matter, he estimated that at 9,532. So it'd be the same as a 1,000 gallons of cattle slurry would be the same as a 50 kg bag of 9,532. And he valued that at 39 euro. So he hasn't, it's done out there in the paper as well for pig slurry. Farmyard manure was valued at 15 euro per ton, giving you an NPK of 3, 2 and 12, and broiler litter and spent mushroom compost are there as well. And I suppose a lot of people will be looking at organic manures this year. You know, it's good to look at the, I suppose if you can, where you're getting it from, get, if they have a test, get the test. But this is a good reference to have, and it's good to put some sort of money on it as well. I suppose the other thing when you're putting out organic manures, don't forget the value that that manure is going to have for your soil as well. So apart from the NPs and Ks, it's going to help to improve your soil health and your soil structure. So yeah, that was the main thing out of David Wall's presentation. Look, he talked about pH as well, and you know, tillage farmers are generally good with their pH, and they know the importance of lime. But I suppose this year it's more important than ever. If you're thinking of cutting back on P's and K's, having your pH right will help to maintain an indices, or you know, can help increase indices. You know, if lime isn't right, it can help to bring you up to the index 3 if you're in it, index 2 or whatever. So look, there's a bit of reading anyway on the tillage pages this week.
The what I've heard reports are certainly talk in a way of some farmers in the livestock industry intending on charging for slurry this year, because of the high fertilizer prices. I suppose to throw it out to the two of you, what's your thoughts on this? Is it the right move? Is it greedy?
All fertilizer nutrients are worth money, Stephen. You know, we can't get away from that, whatever the source. And indeed, arguably, the nutrients present in organics are even more valuable than the ones you put in the bag because of all the ancillary benefits that they bring. But, you know, if you're going to kind of go down that road, then there has to be a two-way traffic. If it's Irish grain going into rations that are making slurry that's to come back into the fields, they pay for the grain. We may have to pay for it going the other way. It's a different kettle of fish if it's imported grains. And this is the problem all along, you know. The need to be able to develop that circular type system where we move nutrients around rather than just importing them coyly as in different forms. So it's something that it probably doesn't surprise me to hear it mentioned, but it's the overall perceived convenience or inconvenience is where farmers will ultimately judge it to be good or bad, because we do have other ways of doing it. You know, it's a lot more time friendly to be putting out something like a pig slurry or a broiler litter because of the density of nutrients that you're getting out there compared with, say, a cattle slurry as an example. So I think if it gets to the stage that we're paying, with people would become a lot more conscious about what they would buy and what they would want for their land. The other thing that I would quickly say is that even if there is a movement scenario going on, as in somebody has access to cattle slurry and it's regular and they're paying for it or they're not paying for it, as the case might be, but all individuals' types of manure need to be alternated. If you start putting on cattle slurry, you end up at very high K's and your peas could begin to be in trouble. If you start going for a lot of pig slurry, you may very well find that your peas are beginning to rise too high, or the same for broiler litter. So there's in all instances, there's a need to handle organic manures in the same way as you would handle compound fertilizers.
I suppose there's opportunity there too, like, you know, to make agreements. Maybe if you're getting farmyard manure from someone, that they're buying straw off you, and maybe the straw is at a reduced rate. You know, there is agreements there that people can make, or some people who are growing maize for livestock farmers might take their slurry and it gets the slurry into their rotation. So, you know, there's other things to consider there in agreements as well. I suppose just if you are getting farmyard manure, make sure that you know where the straw came from, and preferably that it's yours that's coming back, just from the point of view of grass weeds as well.
Yeah, fair enough. I think if a farmer was getting organic manures from another farmer, you know, on a relatively long term basis, and they turned around and tried to charge for it this year, you know, it'd be seen as purely opportunistic. Yeah. And I think farmers would be sore about it. And whenever we do return to some semblance of normality, those farmers won't forget about it, you know. And certainly, like, you're right, Andy, like, organic manures do have a value, of course, but maybe the way to help contribute towards the cost of importing it is maybe contribute towards the cost of transporting it. And I'm talking about maybe in a scenario of a pig producer who has to export slurry, you know, by the lorry load or whatever, because that would be quite common around this part of the world. There are other ways of doing it, but I just think to turn around and charge per ton of slurry for the year that's in it, and the year that we really are facing a farm input crisis, is just the wrong way to go about it. Anyway, we'll move on, because another topic which was covered in the first session of the National Tillage Conference, and to be honest, it was quite a good tillage conference, I think we're all in agreement, was presented by Richie Hackett, and it was around the area of pretty much working out how much to adjust your chemical nitrogen rates by this year in response to sky high fertilizer prices. So I have a piece in this week's paper just detailing it a little bit more. There's a bit to it, there's a bit of working out to it, there's a bit of calculations to do with it, so we won't do it on the podcast. So instead, I would say pick up a copy of the paper and have a good read through it. But basically, in a nutshell, Richie explained that a plant's response to nitrogen. It's not linear, it's not in a straight line, but it is rather, it's curved. So in other words, the initial dose of nitrogen, so the earlier applications as such, and the total application amounts, will, you'll see a greater response. So you will to that nitrogen from the plant. So in other words, when you move up the curve, the more you apply, that the lower the response you'll see. So basically, he said that around the first 50% of a plant's total nitrogen will deliver around 70% of the yield. So basically, that kind of formed a premise of his presentation, really understanding that nitrogen response curve. So then they went on to explain the break-even ratio, and this is quite important. So it is for understanding how much you're able to reduce nitrogen by this year. It's basically the break-even ratio is where a kg of nitrogen that you apply will deliver pretty much the same value in grain. Anything above that break-even ratio, or the more nitrogen you apply, you're in loss-making territory. And basically, once you understand your break-even ratio, from there you can work out your economic optimum rate. So he went through a couple of examples. He went through one with what we would class as normal can prices and grain prices, worked out the break-even ratio, and worked out the optimal nitrogen rate for the crop. And it was all based on winter crops. And then he worked through another example based on today's prices for can at 675 and today's grain prices, average grain prices at around 220 per ton. He worked out the BER and worked out the optimal N rate. And basically from there, he was able to calculate how much you will be able to reduce your nitrogen rates by this year, or how much you will have to reduce those nitrogen rates this year to get your economic optimal rate. And that guy's worked out at around about between 27 and 35 kg of N per hectare, or around 16% of total nitrogen for a winter crop. And he reckoned that on average, now obviously this all comes with massive caveats, that there's variation between soil and crops and yeah, and time of year and so on and so forth, you'll be looking at around about a 2.2 to 0.3 ton per hectare yield loss, which in the grand scheme of things isn't severe. So it isn't. And based on those grain prices, you're still going to make a respectable margin based on that nitrogen reduction rate and based on those grain prices. So there was a lot in it. It was certainly, it was a good talk, and it certainly gave a lot more clarity around the question of nitrogen rate reduction, which we're all going to do this year. Let's face it.
Yeah, it's nicely laid out in the paper, Stephen, like for people to do it, and like it's a really good exercise to carry it out. I'd caution people to slot in their own figures, like where that 675 is for can, like maybe you've bought can at 700, and the 220 for grain. If you haven't sold grain at 220, you know, don't slot in 220 for your grain price. You know, you have to kind of make worst case scenarios in some situations. You know, just
yeah, of course. And if you were to do that, which you should do, because it probably is closer to where reality is going to be, you'd be looking at obviously a bigger nitrogen rate reduction, could be upwards of 20%.
It might also be worth noting, Stephen, that if everybody in the world was to follow Richie's advice this year, that little yield loss, and it's yeah, relatively small, but it's real. If it happens for everybody, it would fair make a difference to the attitudes on world markets and the prices on world markets.
Yeah,
so you might be budgeting 220, and you could end up having to take 270 for it, if there was that much less grain everywhere in the world. So yeah,
turn rapidly changes the calculations for the better.
Yes, but whatever about changing the calculations, they will be after the event, or the price change will be after the event. It certainly would do a lot for incomes, which is what really matters at the end of the day.
Absolutely. No, it was certainly a worthwhile talk, and it is a worthwhile exercise. And then, Andy, on the next page, you have an article on canopy management for the season ahead?
Yeah, it was really about making nitrogen savings, and it hinged on a presentation that Dermot Forrestal gave on canopy management. It's a system that has been in place in the UK for quite a number of years. I know personally I've used it myself, and I think it works and works very, very well. Basically, it's about using the canopy, which is in the crop at the start of the growing season, as a measure or as a container of nutrients that subsequently will die off and translocate within the plant structure to feed new growth. So the more canopy you have today, the more nutrient that's there to drive new canopy production. And that's something, I guess, that we might always have known. But probably what Dermot's adding to the equation is that he's basically saying that if you get that wrong and if you make too much canopy, you not just are spending more money on fertilizer than might be economical, but you're actually driving yield down in the process. And that was kind of the big finding from the research that was going on at Oak Park. And the lowest nitrogen rate that they have used in recent years was the one that gave the highest yield. So being able to measure that canopy, and it can be done in a number of different ways, but the easiest way certainly is having an app on the phone that takes the photograph and gives you the answer. But if you know you have a given canopy, you're going to target what they know is optimum at 3.5. So if you start with 2, you have to fertilize to add another 1.5. And the 1.5 will be generated from the nitrogen that's freely available in the soil. It's there since last year or the year before, or it's being mineralized or whatever. So that will supply some of the nitrogen, and then fertilizer should supply the balance. But whatever the balance is, if, say, you need an additional 50 kilos of nitrogen to make that last unit of green area index, because the fertilizer nitrogen is operating at 60% efficiency, if you want to get 50 kilos into the plant, you'd have to put on 83 or apply 83 to actually achieve that. So that was the premise of what was there, but it certainly represents an opportunity for huge nitrogen savings on winter oilseed rape crop this year, because virtually all canopies are much better than they would be in other years. Just a second leg to what Dermot was talking about there was adding beans into the rotation, and we were talking about planting beans earlier. But Dermot just commented that when you assess a full rotation over the 6 years, and you put in winter wheat and winter barley and the other crops that you might normally grow, as well as beans, you have a direct saving on nitrogen from beans, and you have an indirect saving on nitrogen in one or two subsequent crops. And using 20, I think it was 20% of the total land area in beans, the nitrogen savings over time across the rotation came out to be 31%. And again, that's a very useful piece of information, A, for 2022, but B, for the longer term and our obligations to decrease fertilizer usage.
Yeah, it's a great piece of work. So it is to actually be able to put figures on that. But I believe yourself and Siobhan were at an event yesterday with SeedTech, which went into a little bit more detail on canopy management.
Go ahead, Siobhan.
Yeah, we were down in Oak Park yesterday, so the first event in a long time. I was just thinking, going in the car, I don't know when the last time I was in Oak Park was, which would be strange for us, but great to get out to an event and to see them starting back up again. I suppose the advantage of it was that we were seeing, you know, we were seeing the crop in the field as it was described. So, you know, we were looking at the green area index, you know, that was there in front of us. So it was a little bit easier to understand, I suppose, what that looks like, or what it should look like, just so that you can reference it off the app, but also the problems that you encounter as well. Like, you know, it'd be very difficult to on your app to get the green leaf area index of 3.5, wouldn't it, Andy? You were saying, like, about the bulk of the leaves underneath as well.
I would imagine that it's very virtually impossible for a photograph to do that, Siobhan. Yeah, but once you get in there, you know, the volume of that leaf kind of tells you that this is different to anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
when you get into these heavy crops. And it was interesting, the crop that we were standing in yesterday was generally speaking running above a green area index of 2. And there are a couple of kind of very rough guides for anybody just walking through a crop. They would say that a green area index of 1 is about 50% of ground cover of leaf.
Yeah.
It's just a guideline to have. It's not deadly accurate, but it's a guideline. And a green area index of 2 would be 75% ground cover. But in all of what, no, not all of, but in the bulk of what we walked through yesterday, you were looking at, I would say, virtually 100% ground cover. And that was in a September, I think it was a September 7 or September 8 sown crop of hybrid rape. Really good crop.
And I suppose the advice was to keep doing those GAIs as well, you know, to keep doing them up until you're shedding the nitrogen.
Yeah. So I suppose with an opto, with a GAI of 3.5, what are they saying as regards to nitrogen rates?
Very simply, if you have a GAI of 3.5 and that's what you're trying to have as an optimum rate for the start of flowering, well, don't put on any fertilizer nitrogen in the leafy stage. Wait until stem extension, because the canopy is already there and you do not want to make that canopy any bigger than it is, because it's potentially negative for yield. One other element of the conversation that emerged yesterday, and it was very interesting because it's another change that's coming about because of changing farm practice, is that when we're talking about canopy and making this canopy to produce the maximum yield, the second part of the making the yield is actually filling the grains. And we've always been confined as to getting nitrogen on to fill the grains early in stem extension, because the crop would very quickly get higher than most spreaders could spread uniformly above it. And as a consequence, we've always loaded that seed filling nitrogen on early. Now, it's partly seed filling. It's partly to do with keeping the lower leaves greener for longer to help the duration of grain fill as well. So it's doing two things indirectly. But moving towards liquid fertilizers means that we have an infinite capacity to get them on later, because the booms can be continuously adjusted upwards to get that uniform spread. And we can target that nitrogen at a time in the crop later into flowering, when it will be more effective at preserving the integrity of the lower leaves, providing, of course, that light can still get down there, because that's part of what canopy management is, to let light penetrate into the crop so that the light's hitting the leaves, because the leaves are the most useful and efficient organ for photosynthesis. And that's what's generating the seed numbers, and it's generating the ability to fill the grain.
Okay. Excellent stuff, guys. Plenty in that. A lot of food for thought. So look, we'll move on. Siobhan, we had some announcements this week about the 2022 National Ploughing Championships.
Yeah, so look, I suppose we knew the actual ploughing anyway was going to go ahead in Rathnasca, County Laois, 20th to the 22nd of September this year. And the MPA came out yesterday and said they had met with the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, and Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnellogue, you know, in an effort to make sure that the event goes ahead. And they said COVID-19 guidelines are going to be a priority at the event. And you know, that basically, look, it looks like they're looking forward to the event, and hopefully that it'll run this year. Anna May said that I suppose the trade stand portal is open. That's where we're at with the ploughing. And I suppose it said the ploughing was on a 2-year hiatus. But we know that the actual ploughing went ahead last year, and it was a great event. And it was great to see a focus back on the ploughing in 2021. And I hope that stays for 2022, that, you know, that the ploughing is the focus of the event, and that those competitors, you know, get, you know, don't get, I suppose, hidden in the background when we go back to the stands.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great event last year. So it was. Okay, that's something to look forward to. Andy, market-wise, what's happening?
Stephen, the usual tricks, the usual movements. We've seen quite a bit of movement since last week. I think last Friday, December 22, Matif closed at, I think it was 243.25 or 243.75. So that was Friday's close. Monday, it pretty much went nowhere. Tuesday, it began to turn the other way and come up. Yesterday, Wednesday, it came up again. So as I'm talking to you now, the last deal that was done at 254. So look, at it's up and down and up and down. And that's the way it has been. And it's the way it's going to be. It's interesting, though, because the market, the buyers might, well, definitely would like to have seen it staying closer to the 240 mark. But as I watch overall markets, and I'm watching maize in particular, because we all know how important maize is in terms of its influence on overall prices. Maize prices, Chicago, short term, long term, they're all, none of them kind of took these big falls in recent weeks that wheat did. They're all arguably tending upwards again, mainly as a consequence of different pressures that are coming to play, all related to weather, or virtually all related to weather, particularly in South America. Everybody is depending on South America having a big soya and maize harvest this year to relieve tightness in markets. And as time is passing, there may be less chance that'll happen. But maybe is not a definite statement either. So at the moment, things seem to be pointed slightly upwards again.
Excellent. Good to hear. And just finally, Andy, weather-wise for the week ahead, what are Met Aaron saying?
Well, Siobhan alluded to it earlier. It's nice to look into a forecast for a week in January and see it virtually full of zeros. There's a little bit of rain, and certainly Met Aaron continue to talk about showers in different areas. The possibility of showers at times in the west and at times in the northwest, but looking at a maximum rainfall noted at this point of 3 millimetres and only one wet day, if there is a wet day in any of the regions. So the high is dominating. Let's make the best of it. It will, of course, mean that temperatures generally are fairly low. That doesn't stop drills from working, even if it stops plants from growing. But at the moment, looking like maybe we're seeing an increase in temperatures on Wednesday. Something is happening. Certainly, there's a big increase in wind speed there for a while on Wednesday, and that's probably bringing about some little bit of a change from somewhere. Maybe little in the line of frost that night as well, which is a plus for the guys that might have the early spud sown, even if they won't be up yet, because they'd probably prefer not to be seeing frost from now on.
Absolutely. Always great to end the podcast on a high like that, Andy. But there, we are going to have to leave it for the week. So from Andy, Siobhan, and myself, Stephen, Rob, thank you all very much for listening. And until next week, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.